Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, welcome to the Steve Jones Show on this Wednesday. It's baseball day today. We're going to sit here and talk a lot of baseball for the next hour or so, and then tack in our own comments. This opening half hour, of course, Kevin and I will just have an open discussion. Then we're going to transition and get Rob Beertemple in, who is the beat writer for the Pittsburgh Pirates. He's with the Pirates right now in Seattle. We're going to go from Rob in Seattle to Chris Wheeler, and Wheels will be on. We'll have him at 4:06 today. Tomorrow, Pat on the show. Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report on Friday. I'm safely ensconced here at the Chateau. Feet up and very comfy today. The Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. And the Hilshers General Store Hotline, which is getting a workout today as we call out to Seattle and Philadelphia, respectively. The wonderful and incredible Hilshers General Store, 7 miles south of Sealands Grove on Routes 11 and 15. Like a preview of the 21st Century General Store? Very easy. Go to www.hilshersstore.com. We now bring in the voice of the fan.
Thank you, I believe.
I was expecting to hear Sean Carey or Drew Kelly, but that's okay.
No, you're stuck with me.
Yeah, we'll go with you. You know, Let's see. It's been quite a week for you. I mean, here it is Wednesday. Already by Wednesday, you've traded away 8 Phillies.
Yep.
But won't trade Utley.
No.
Right. No. You gave me a half hour of fandom on Tim Tebow, the third string quarterback for the New England Patriots.
Got the intangibles, or the intangibles, as it were.
No offense, but like Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Peyton, Eli Manning, Drew Brees, okay, Roethlisberger, they have intangibles and rings. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I took a half hour of my life and talked about what you wanted to yesterday.
And it was a great moment.
I had to cleanse myself later.
Listen, in that half hour, you said Tebow more times than you have in your entire career and may ever.
Yeah, and I kept telling you that Ryan Mallett's the backup quarterback, and a lot of teams in the NFL want him.
Well, now they have a chance to get him because the Patriots now have another quarterback that they can bring in.
I can tell you in no uncertain terms, Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick are not getting rid of Mallett.
Egging you on that one because I knew better.
They're not getting rid of Mallett. Or as they say in your neighborhood, Malay.
Malay, that's right.
Because you're the sophisticated side of town.
Actually, we would say Malliot, but, you know, it's...
Oh, brutal. Brutal. Well, Rob Beertemple, old friend of mine, by the way. Rob and I go back many, many years because he was the beat writer for Penn State up through 2005. For Penn State football. Great guy. Great writer. Now he's the beat writer for the Pirates. Has been for several years. And we'll talk with him about what the Pirates have done. It's been remarkable. Then Wheels on the Philly situation. Kevin has sent me a list of questions.
Yes, I have.
And at some point, I'll open that email.
I've gotten one particular question from a group of Pirates fans that are friends of mine that heard we were having this on the show today. And you know what the one question was? It was, is this team for real, and should we get excited? It was kind of a two-part question.
Well, and I'll tell you right now, the Pirates, in a lot of ways, defy explanation. And this is why they defy explanation. As of right now, which two teams have the best record in baseball? 1 and 2. They happen to be the St. Louis Cardinals. In the Pirates division, and the Pirates. They are 1-2 right now in baseball record-wise. I mean, everybody, American League, National League, whatever. Now let me recite to you just the pure numbers of it. The Cardinals have the best record in baseball, all right?
By a game.
By a game. They are fifth in all of baseball in runs scored. They are second in baseball in batting average. They are third in baseball in on-base percentage. 11th in slugging percentage. Okay. Now let's look at the Cardinals' pitching numbers. They are first in all of baseball in team ERA. They are second in all of baseball in whip. They're eighth in baseball in batting average given up. And they're sixth in all of baseball in quality starts. Now, that is the number one team in all of baseball. Heard a lot of single-digit numbers there, didn't you?
I did.
Here is the team with the second-best record in baseball.
I know where this is going.
The Pirates are 25th in batting average in baseball. They're 21st in on-base percentage. They're 22nd in slugging percentage. They're 21st in runs scored. Okay, now we go to the pitching numbers.
Well, you would think that the pitching numbers, since the batting numbers aren't as high, would be better.
First in batting average, sixth in whip, third in team ERA, but 21st in quality starts. I've never seen anything like this. All the Cardinals numbers make complete sense and are in the neighborhood of what you would expect a team to be competing for the best overall record in baseball. The Pirates' numbers are befitting of a team that should be 10th or 11th in all of baseball and not second.
So what you're saying is Pirates fans have a lot of Iron City on hand just in case.
Well, no. What I'm saying is this. They are an extremely confident team that knows how to win now. They can really make a statement if they take those numbers up to where they're like 14th or 15th hitting-wise. Imagine if they were 14th or 15th where they would be right now with the pitching they're getting. But here's the one red flag I will put up about what the Pirates have done. And that is as follows. If their numbers offensively remain where they are in the 21 to 25 range across the board, okay? And that quality start thing stays in the 20s where it's been all season. If I'm a Pirate fan, I'm scared about August 15th to September 30th as to whether or not my bullpen has thrown too many pitches between April 1st and August 14th. And how tired are they without the run support to back them up? That's the red flag. Right now, they're going great guns, and they may go great guns right through this whole thing and win it all. But I'm saying that's the red flag. If I'm a Pirate fan, those numbers worry me. If I'm a Cardinal fan, I'm going, hey, I feel good. The Pirates have won 4 in a row, and what the Cardinals have lost 3 in a row. They're separated by a game. Well. All right. Time now for Above the Noise. And don't forget the Her Rant of the Day. It's at 4:40 today, and it's going to be a beauty. Oh, it is going to be something. I'm acting as if and pretending as if I know what he's going to talk about.
I was going to say, I've not shared this with you yet. Do you have ESP?
It's really good. That's called promo.
Well done.
First, Above the Noise with Dan Patrick. Well, I think if there was a lock of all locks, you would have thought that without a doubt at Wimbledon, Roger Federer would be a lock to the second week and Maria Sharapova would be the lock to the second week. And neither one of them made it out of today. Bill Amin just texted me from Wimbledon moments ago. to tell me about Federer's loss, but that's not the big story of the day. The big story of the day, without question, is the arrest of former New England Patriots tight end Aaron Hernandez, who has been arraigned in Attleboro, Massachusetts. Aaron Katarski has more from ABC.
Standing before a Massachusetts judge in a white V-neck T-shirt, Aaron Hernandez was formally charged with murder. He also faces several gun-related charges and the killing of Odin Lloyd, a semi-pro football player found dead a week and a half ago a mile from where Hernandez lives. Hernandez was arrested at his home this morning and almost immediately released by the New England Patriots, with whom he had a $40 million contract.
Well, and that's exactly what they did. Look, the Patriots obviously were tipped off as to what the charges were, because most of the day people were assuming that the charges were obstruction of justice. All right, you don't release a player on charges of obstruction of justice under normal circumstances. But when you find out that the charge is murder, you release them. Obviously, the Patriots found out and were tipped off as to what the charge was going to be. And there's a murder charge. To what degree, I do not know. I do not know if it's first, second degree. I don't know. And there's also five gun charges involved.
Actually,
according to what the prosecutor laid out, that security camera, the last thing in that camera is Hernandez with a gun in his hand going downstairs.
I think we have the charges here. Let me, if you can hear them, the audio is a little.
Charges 1334-2057 alleged by the North Attleboro Police. Count 1 and count 2, date of offense 2017-2013. Count 1 is murder. Count 2, carrying without a license. Carrying a firearm without a license. Count 3, possession of a large capacity firearm. Count 4, possession of a large capacity firearm.
Yeah, those are the gun charges. The first one is just, they just charged him with murder, but they didn't say to what degree.
Right, right.
Meanwhile, he was released by the Patriots. Chris Mortensen, the ESPN NFL insider, talked about the team releasing him and how it affects the team on the field, which right now is a bit irrelevant.
Obviously, it's going to impact them. They gave this guy a $40 million contract last year. He got a $12.5 million signing bonus. You know, we know how vital he is to the team. We know that Gronkowski is certainly a question mark recovering from the surgeries he's had this year, most recently the back surgery.
Certainly, you're talking about a Patriots team now that has lost 84% of its receiving production from the year before. Now, that's more of an issue we'll deal with in a couple of weeks. There's a person dead. He is charged with murder. Far more important than the effect on the football team. The NCAA has placed Oregon's football program on probation for 3 years.
Somebody's got to explain this one to me.
They will operate with 84 scholarship players this year, 84 next year, and 84 the year after. Oh, how will they get by? ESPN's Joe Shad thinks Oregon got off light.
The fact that Mark Helfrich in his first year gets a chance to bring his Oregon Ducks team potentially to a BCS bowl, maybe even a national championship, when last year Ohio State coach Urban Meyer, North Carolina coach Larry Fedora, they were unable to do that. So a few scholarships, this is a great victory for Oregon.
It is a great victory for Oregon, but I want to say this about the Oregon situation. I mean, I could sit here and joke that, hey, look, if you pay a recruiting service and they steer players your way, it's really okay. And if you have a phony class and a phony curriculum and you throw a bunch of football players in there, that's okay too. Okay? You can make jokes about that. But this is something where I have been steadfast for 30 years about how I felt about this. I have always felt that individuals should be targeted, not programs. That if a coach is involved, that coach should be suspended for, based on the severity, 1, 5, or 10 years. That if a player is found taking, the player should be suspended for the lifetime of the scholarship from playing football, college football. So I've felt that the individual should be targeted, not programs. I've always thought that was bogus.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
A lot going on. Aaron Hernandez has been charged with murder and five gun charges. The investigators have taken their time with this. This was not something where they went out last Tuesday and said it happened. We're And no, they took their time and they went back multiple times. And they have charged him with murder and five gun charges. And Roger Federer and Maria Sharapova out at Wimbledon. And Brian Cashman has told A-Rod to shut up. About time somebody did. And, oh, I'm sure there's more going on somewhere.
Hard to believe that there could be anything else.
Today, Rob Beer Temple, Pittsburgh Tribune Review with the Pirates in Seattle. Chris Wheeler next half hour on the Phillies. Tomorrow, Patrick Chambers and Mike Muscala. Next week, Bill O'Brien. You can pick yourself up now. You're surprised by that one.
I'm still going through this whole thing with Oregon. I cannot understand how you justify this as the NCAA. I don't get it.
Okay. In terms of what they've done with other people, including Penn State, the lack of action on North Carolina, really the lack of action here. But I want to go back to something, and this is not some epiphany I had last July. I have felt this, and I've articulated this on talk shows, whether I've been a host or a guest, for 30 years, that targeting and penalizing programs is wrong, that you target and you penalize the individuals, and you crack down on the individuals. If the head coach is involved, the head coach can be suspended for 1, 5, 10 years or a lifetime considering what's gone on. Not allowed to coach at any college football program. That if an assistant is involved, 1, 5, 10 or lifetime depending on the severity of the infractions involved. Anybody else with access to what's gone on should be also lose their job over it and not be allowed to get another job in intercollegiate athletics if they are party to it. And the player or players involved should never be allowed to play college football on any level if they were taking cars, money, whatever it happens to be. In this particular case, the recruiting service, right, should be banned from use by anybody in college football, that if anybody in the Oregon staff had a direct line that made this happen, they should be in that 1, 5, and 10 year ban. And any of the players that were steered to Oregon, their career should be done now. That's the penalty that should have been meted out. Not taking away scholarships and that's how it should be.
But there's no penalty at all for the people that are involved in this. Am I wrong with that?
No, there aren't. You know, Chip Kelly gets an 18-month whatever.
Yeah, but he's not.
And you and I both know in 18 months he's still going to be the coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, so
exactly.
It's irrelevant.
If anything, the Eagles win. Because now he has to stay with the Eagles because he's got nowhere else to go unless he gets another job in the NFL.
He's got a contract with them where even if he didn't coach, he's still going to get guaranteed money. All right, but I'm just saying that's how you mete out the justice. It has to be individual. It cannot be about. I mean, the fact that the Penn State football program is on probation. Okay, excuse me, but let's take out aside the fact that the truth hasn't come out yet, and justice hasn't really happened yet. Okay, people want two things in the Penn State case. They want truth and they want fairness. Well, two absolutely critical individuals have not spoken a word in 20 months. And they're critical to us finding out the truth. Haven't said a word. People want truth and they want fairness. Now, whatever that truth is, it may be truth that when you look at it makes people happy and they go, okay, all right. Or it could be truth that makes them go, oh, no. And then you deal out your fairness that way. That's what you want. And that's what we don't have yet in this case. The free report did not talk to these individuals. They do not have their perspective on it at all. Thus, any justice never should have been meted out against. Excuse me, explain to me, the second somebody in Indianapolis can explain to me what Bill O'Brien, Charlie Fisher, John Butler, Mike Hall, John Urschel, you can explain to me exactly what they have done to deserve this. I'd like to know.
But Steve, even
please, I say this because I don't want some bureaucrat coming to, well, you're not thinking of the kids. I think about the kids all the time. I prefaced it 1,000 times. I've talked more about it than you have in Indianapolis. More than you have. Okay? Much more than you have. Okay, so I will take no lectures from them about what I should be thinking of as priorities. I've talked about it more than you have.
But if the NCAA doesn't punish those involved, which in this case I think it's safe to say
they haven't,
didn't.
The punishment should have been whatever coach or coaches were involved in this should have been suspended.
Yes.
Kelly could not have been the only one.
But
you know, and if it's a recruiting coordinator or an assistant coach, they should feel the heat of what happened. The players that were steered to Oregon should also feel the heat of what happened, and
right.
That recruiting service should be on the ban list, and if anybody picks them up, then there should be a fine involved.
But with the suspension, or with not the suspension, rather.
They
but
didn't
the,
get anything.
But with the scholarship removal, one scholarship for the next 2 years, you can still mm-hmm. play in a postseason game, including
right.
bowl games and a Pac-12
right.
championship. How can you justify that when it, again, directly affected the play on the field compared to what happened to Penn State and the punishment that was brought down on Penn State, losing all those scholarships, losing all the possibility of going to postseason play for so many years? Now, I understand what happened.
Penn State is a legal matter.
Right.
It is not a competitive matter.
I agree completely. That was the point I wanted to make.
And again, I don't want to hear, you got to think, look, I've prefaced how many times about, we always remember the victims. I prefaced how many times? So please, okay? Okay, don't need a lecture from Indianapolis about whether I get it or not, or from Oregon State.
Yeah, this has nothing to do with comparing
right.
the two incidents. It has to do with comparing the two decisions by the NCAA.
I don't understand. Everything is supposed to be about what affects the competition on the field. On the surface, what Oregon did on the surface without investigating it appears to have affected the competition on the field. What happened at North Carolina in terms of keeping players eligible appeared to have affected the competition on the field.
That seems to be a no-brainer to me from the reports that we've heard.
Yet, the excuses that we get out of this, you sit back and go, what the heck? Now, again, my philosophy is different. I'm not for programs being, you know, take USC, for example. Okay? Lane Kiffin should not have had to walk into USC. And you know I'm no Lane Kiffin fan at all. Okay? Everybody knows I'm no Lane Kiffin fan. I think there are certain people in certain professions that are massively overrated. I think he's massively overrated. He's never proven to me that he's the guy, okay? But at the same time, he shouldn't have to walk in and have to deal with 70 scholarships, 75 scholarships. He didn't do anything wrong. His staff didn't do anything wrong. It should have been targeted to the coaches that were involved and should have been targeted to the individuals that took. And they were told, NCAA investigators, about a basketball player and a football player taking money from somebody in the L.A. County controller's office. Okay? They were told about it. Found nothing. Comes out later. Oh, yeah. Well, how could you find nothing when it turned out it was true? All right.
One of the things before
We have to get to baseball. We got to do that. I have one more question for you later. I don't have a lot of time for that right now. We got to get to do this.
You're right.
Okay. And we'll talk about it in the final half hour because we got Rob and then we got Wheels. Now, if you don't want Wheels on, it's up to you.
No, that's all right. I can save my question.
We can blow Wheels off, because your question's really important.
I have a lot of questions for Wheels, too, so, yeah, we'll be fine.
I'll bet you do. We're going to talk about the Pirates first. Rob Beard-Temple is the beat writer for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. He joins us from Seattle. Rob, welcome. It's great to talk with you again, my friend.
Steve, how you been, man?
I'm doing really well. And this must be quite a trip to watch all this happen, isn't it?
Yeah, I was the same before. It's interesting to see where this team has gone so far. I was curious heading into spring training how they would react. And that was the big question, and I'm sure a lot of the players got tired of answering it. How do you rebound from that epic collapse last season and the almost just not quite as epic collapse the year before that? But I think they're deeper in a lot of ways. They're a little bit more poised in a lot of ways. And they've had, let's be blunt, they've had some breaks go their way as well. And that's the kind of mix that you need if you're going to, challenge for a playoff spot.
All right. Now I'm going to read to you some very quick numbers. Sometimes numbers tell a story, sometimes they don't. The two best records in baseball belong to the St. Louis Cardinals and the Pittsburgh Pirates. Now the Cardinals, the Cardinals numbers are in some ways epic. They are fifth in runs scored, second in batting average, third in on-base percentage, 11th in slugging percentage. Pitching, first in ERA, eighth in batting average, second in WHIP, sixth in quality starts. Now let's transition to the team with the second best record in baseball. The team with the second best record in baseball happens to have 25th in batting average, 22nd in slugging percentage, 21st in on-base percentage, 21st in runs. Now, when it gets to pitching, obviously we both know it's better. First in ERA, first in batting average, 3rd ERA, 6th in WHIP, but 21st in quality starts. These are the top two records, Rob. Why are they so close?
It's a night and day thing. It is a night and day kind of comparison when you look at it, and it really shows, more than anything else, the value of pitching in the game these days, of good quality pitching, and not just starting pitching. Because like you said, the quality starts number is real low, and a lot of that came from the first, 4, 5, 6 weeks of the season. The starters, a lot of them, weren't getting very deep in the games. But if there's one thing that Neil Huntington, the general manager of this club, the one thing he can do, he can put together a pretty damn good bullpen. They've been solid the past couple of years, and this at the start of this year, they've just been spectacular. Now we've seen Jason Groley, the closer, kind of slip a little bit in his last couple of outings. Right. He gave up a game-tying homer in Cincinnati, and then a couple of days ago in Anaheim, gave up 3 in the bottom of the 10th.
Right.
Their middle guys, Melanson, Tony Watson, Justin Wilson. Guys who, that's another one of those ingredients that you got to have that people always overlook. You got to have those, lesser-known guys who really step up and just do the job. And those middle relievers don't get a lot of attention very often unless they, give up a grand slam or something. Right. But those are really the guys. I think that, if you're looking for team MVPs, the middle relief guys especially, with Melanson and Gulley in the back end, have just been unhittable almost.
And you'll find, I think, if anybody does research over the last 10 years, I think you'll find that for the most part, the teams that win it and get to the World Series are the ones where they've had career years out of the middle relief guys.
Yeah. And that's something why, at the beginning of the year, the quality starts number is overlooked a lot. But it's important, not so much in April, May, June.
It's August.
It's more important you know, August, September, because that's when those innings and those and appearances, and not even game appearances, but just times that the relievers get up in the bullpen and get hot, all that takes a toll. And that's part of the big part of the problem the past couple of years has been those guys just melted down when you got to August. They were worn out. They had nothing left. So, you know, they really need to find ways to, you know, and I know that Clint Hurdle has been rationing the number of times he's used Mark Melancon, for example, over the past couple of weeks, really trying to save some of those bullets for the end of the year.
That's okay, because he took the entire year with the Red Sox off last year.
exactly.
And I can say that as a diehard Red Sox fan, I can tell you that. in spring training, there was a nice battle for that fifth spot. Eventually, Jeff Locke won it, and he's 6-1. What has made him a quality guy that has been a go-to guy in that rotation?
I think some of it is he's just a little. He has a little bit of an edge to him down that we didn't see. I remember his first couple of outings in Major League. There was one game in particular, I believe, in Los Angeles. He was standing on the mound, and the TV pulled in for a tight shot, and you could tell it looked like, you know, he needed to go make a quick uniform change because he was so nervous out there and just so overwhelmed by the moment and what was going on. And even when facing batters, you could see times when he would back off a little bit and start to nibble and start to and take himself out of his game. This year, he's so much more able to work inside with fastballs, and that's something we didn't see from him in previous years. We try to take charge of the at-bat from the first or second pitch. And in the past, he was letting the hitter dictate where things were going in the at-bats. Now it's turned around a little bit. He's coming right at guys. And, you know, that's something that when it works, you know, confidence builds and everything just blossoms from there.
You've also had a taste of American League ball on this trip, whereas the DH, and we've been talking about this and debating this. What do you think of it? Baseball's the only sport that doesn't unify its rules. What do you think of watching a DH game versus a pitcher hit game?
Ban the DH is what I would do. It's not baseball. I like the strategy that's involved when you have the pitcher hitting. I like the brand of ball, the way you have to use your bench, the way you think about using your bullpen. It really is a different game, and so I was so surprising on Sunday whenever they headed for the extra innings, and the Pirates gave up their DH when they kept, you know, they used McCutchen to pinch hit for their DH, and then McCutchen stayed at the game and played center field.
Right.
So in essence, they forfeited the DH, and then in the 10th inning, you know, it was a sacrifice bunt that set up that whole four run inning that won it. So, you know, right there, I'd say case closed, National League ball superior.
What's it been like for you seeing a couple places you haven't seen on the tour? I mean, you went to Anaheim, now you're up in Seattle. What's that part been like?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably one of the things that's nice about interleague play is you get to see the different ballparks and see how they play, you know. And it's interesting you talk to the guys about how they go out to take a quick crash course, you know, and how to play some of these ballparks. You know, outfielders playing balls off the wall and such. But we saw that last year too, like in Miami, whenever they opened a new stadium in Miami and guys had went out, you know, went out early and just, you know, had coaches hit balls off the wall. And it's nice to see different cities and things around that and some of the atmosphere. And for the Pirates, you know, I was on the trip in 07 when we went out to Anaheim.
Right.
And that might have been one of the lowest points in Pirates history. They got swept. They got humiliated 10-1 in the middle game. There was a clubhouse, I don't want to say a fight, but it was a brouhaha. Guys had to be pulled apart. Probably one of the low water marks of the past 20 years. So to go out there now and have it be a completely different situation, that's a little bit easier to deal with.
What's this team's confidence like?
Pretty good. I think the fact when they brought in guys like Liriano, Wandy Rodriguez, when you add veteran players to your mix, instead of, you know, so many times over the past 20 years, we'd see them add players, but it would be a guy from AAA, you know, and you need, you know, an infusion of young talent, so to speak. But there's a lot to be said for just the sense of confidence, of poise, of calm that you can find in a clubhouse when you bring in guys who have been there and done that before. And I think that's really been reflective this year, not only in the pitching staff, but you're starting to get a sense of it with some of the guys, the offensive guys as well, that they're kind of, even though the numbers aren't quite there yet, I think the series in Anaheim, I remember talking with Andrew McCutchen right after that third game, he was just like, big exhale because they finally started hitting the ball.
5 weeks before the trading deadline, is it possible for them to find a playoff caliber shortstop?
No, I don't think they're going to come up. Those guys are hard to find, hard to pry away from people. That's just going to be an ongoing saga. We're in the process now of Clint Barmas mentoring Jordy Mercer, and I would say that unless something really radical happens, Jordy goes into next season as your starting shortstop. I think they have a better chance of maybe finding somebody for right field.
Yeah.
And everybody's mentioned Giancarlo Stanton. The Pirates, I'm sure, would be interested. They would chat with the Marlins about what that might take, but I'm not sure they would be willing to give up the 2, 3, 4 prospects, top tier prospects that it would take to get a guy like that. I think they also could probably look for some relief help just in case guys wear down.
Right.
So something like that, I think. It is a lot more likely. Maybe a bat, something to put right field, try something different, or some relief help.
Rob, it's always a pleasure. It's great catching up with you, my friend.
Steve, yeah, appreciate it, man. Anytime, give me a call. Hopefully I won't have the technical problems with my phone next time or so. Just give me a buzz.
I'll try not to have technical problems with my brain, and we'll be even.
All right, man.
Thanks, Rob. Rob Beer-Temple, Pittsburgh Tribune Review, who delayed Kevin's questions. Sorry.
It's all right. We got another hour.
Wheels in the next half hour for me to talk to. Look at you, thick skin, hanging
fine,
in there.
Fine.
Oh, you sound it. Are you trying to convince me or you?
Just keep looking at the NCAA and trying to figure out what that really stands for.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, again, I go back, individuals should be penalized and not programs. And I've said that for 30 years, and I'm going to keep saying that anytime something like this comes up. The Hernandez thing is just, it's overshadowing everything today. And it is a first-degree murder charge. And no bail.
No bail.
First degree murder charge, which means if it's their first degree, they have to try to prove premeditation. And then the 5 gun charges. Patriots released him an hour after he was arrested. Not an hour after he was charged, an hour after he was arrested. They obviously found out or knew something that the rest of us didn't know. You're not going to release him over obstruction of justice.
I did get a text from a friend that said the NCAA stands for not consistent at all.
No.
Probably true in this case.
Well, I'm just going to show up and do what I have to do.
60 more minutes for me to vent.
Yeah, well, you have your rant of the day coming up.
I think I just went through it.